What is your major malfunction, Numbnut? Didn't Mommy and Daddy show you enough attention when you were a child?
And you have meddled with the primal forces of nature. And you will atone.
Oh, yeah, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, snow.
Feel your sister's morale. And other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, because this is just real.
The truth shall set you free, but first, it will piss you off. Naughty by Nature, with Nature Boy. Interesting people, with interesting ideas, for an interesting conversation. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Nature Boy. I hope the last week has found you well, and the next will be even better. If you liked the first episode, you will like the one we have for you today. Today, we're going deep into the esoteric with specifically Aleister Crowley, who he was, the impact that he's had on society, and the impact that he has even to this very day. And I could think of no better person than to have this conversation with than my next guest. He's a researcher, author, filmmaker, attorney, and podcaster. His many books include The Smiley Face Killers, Children of the Beast, Global Death Cult, Abomination, and Prophet of Evil. He's the host of the William Ramsey Investigates podcast, and his deep knowledge of the occult mixed with a Christian perspective is par excellence. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the amazing William Ramsey.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me, Nature Boy. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I've been looking forward to this for a long time and speaking with you. We're talking off air. I've been fascinated, might be an overstatement, with Aleister Crowley from when I first learned about him back in the 80s when I had a friend who was part of the OTO. And we'd have many long nights talking about occultic philosophies and where they came from. That's where I first learned about the association between Freemasonry and the occult. And since then, that crazy son of a gun hasn't been able to leave my mind. But I'm not a follower of him. I'm a Christian, but I'm interested in him because of who he was, and specifically the massive, sublime, if you will, impact that he's had on society. And he continues to have on society this day, although the man died in, 1947?
47, correct. Weird year, too. Strange. A lot of things happened in 47, yeah. Which, including his death, his demise, yeah.
Yeah, him and L. Ron. What was that, the Babylon Working that they did? Is that the name?
Correct. Yeah, it was L. Ron Hubbard and Parsons.
Yeah.
Jack Marvel Parsons, yeah.
I mean, I remember Tony telling me a long time ago, he looked at me and says, you know, NASA's full of SOTO members, don't you? And I, at the time, I'm like, okay, that's, I don't know why. Then once I started learning about Parsons, boom, then it makes perfect sense. But before we get too deep in the weeds, can you do a basic introduction of who Crowley was, kind of go over his past, his history, and all that good stuff that you know so well?
Sure. Yeah. Just like you said, he passed away in 1947. He was born in 1875 near Stratford-on-Avon, where he was born into a family, a wealthy family. He had turned, one of his siblings died in childbirth or very young. So he was an only child of privilege, really. His two parents were members of what was known as the Exclusive Brethren. So they were a very puritanical subset of the Plymouth Brethren run by Darby, for people who know kind of Darby. His theology, kind of, he was a dispensationalist, but Crowley really loved his dad. His dad passed away when he was 12, and then he was raised by his mother and his uncle, and he went to kind of young privileged schools that were Exclusive Brethren schools. So he went to like a Cambridge high school in Cambridge, and they're very violent. He almost died, like literally came near to death. He had to be taught by tutors, but he had access to really tons of money. He never really had to work. And he was a member of the upper class in a very class-conscious society at that time in the 19th century, and then got into Cambridge. And when he got into Cambridge, he became interested really in three things. He was interested in rock climbing, poetry, and occultism or esotericism. So he would do all these readings and preliminary readings. And it led him to this group that was kind of coming into view at that time called the Golden Dawn. And they were a post-Masonic kind of magical, really ceremonial magical order. And they're still around in some iterations today. Their books are still very well-referenced and things like that for people who are interested in esotericism or ceremonial magic. So Crowley got into this group and had some conflicts with the founder of the group, one of the original founder. His name was Mathers. McGregor Mathers, that was a fake name, but he kind of, Crowley learned stuff from him about styling and kind of this kind of wearing costumes and things like that. But that was really kind of his teacher. Crowley made oaths of silence of not to divulge any information from the Golden Dawn, which he renounced, and then it led him to a court case. So there's actually a known court case between him and Mathers, and the judge was very amused by their hijinks. So he gets done with the Golden Dawn and really kind of embarks on his own kind of magical thing. He was traveling the world mountain climbing, like huge mountain climbing expeditions. There was a lot of times he was in Switzerland and then took a huge, you know, baggage handlers to go on these expeditions with other wealthy people, people of means who could afford them, on two mountains in present day. I think it's either Nepal or India. And one, I think it's K2, and Kanchenjunga is the other one. So they were both never ascended. They were trying to ascend to the top to be the first people at the top. But the technology at that time was nothing like it is today. So they were kind of failed ascents. And on the second big expedition Crowley went on, he kind of ruined his reputation. But when there was a avalanche and people died, and he just sat in his tent like he could care less. So they wouldn't even step out to help any of his kind of fallen baggage handlers or Sherpas or whatever they were. So that kind of ruined him. And those are all very well recorded too in history. Actually, there were a lot of journalists and things like that following this story. So a lot of that information made it back to Western newspapers. So you can see a lot of those pictures are still extant. But on his trip back, he met this woman named Kelly. On one of his trips back from the East, he had traveled through kind of present day Vietnam, South China. But on the way back in 1904, kind of a seminal event happened to him, what he called the most important event, which was he was in Egypt and his wife at that time said, they're calling for you or something like that. And so that led him to write this document called the Book of the Law. It's a three-part document. And it kind of enunciated a lot of his religious and still kind of a centerpiece of the OTO, like you said. So they used this kind of Book of the Law in their ritual layout. So they'll have the candles, and then the centerpiece is this Book of the Law, which he said was dictated over his shoulder to him by an entity he called Awa. So it was a received book and really became the centerpiece of what he called Thelema, which is this kind of aggregate of really Eastern knowledge, which was coming to the West at that time in the 19th century. People like Blavatsky. It was very fashionable to kind of understand these things that they were up to. Like today, we know so much about yoga. But back at those days, this was new knowledge or things from the East that really a lot of people didn't know about. There's actually pictures of Crowley doing yoga and yoga poses. Pretty interesting. So his religion of Thelema, he was really became a kind of an occult teacher. Actually started something called the Astrum Argentum, which is the Silver Star, which is a kind of a teaching organization where you don't even have to be anywhere. You can do it all through kind of written missives or letters or things like that. And you have one person guiding you through. That's still around today, actually. There's like still people kind of practicing that and teaching people this type of magic.
Is it prominent still, the AA?
I wouldn't say it's prominent, but my understanding is that there are people still practicing. Like there's still like somebody teaches you and you get taught through these letters. I mean, one of the things about Crowley that's extraordinary is like a lot of the stuff he did was pre-internet, right? So he was just writing. He's a really a literateur. That's what I called him, because a lot of his letters are extant too. The letters he's written to people and all the notable people and are still in libraries all around the world in England. majority of them are in England. But so anyway, so he kind of is, let's see, 1904. Mm-hmm. And then he's writing and writing books a lot. He wrote fiction books. He wrote poetry books. His poetry was never very well received, outside of maybe his circle, his literary circle. But he's always traveling. He's kind of hard to keep a track on. Like some people, you know where they are at certain points of their life. But he's kind of moving around. He ends up in the U.S. Actually comes to the U.S. on the Lusitania, which is very curious. And one of his roles, it wasn't as a member of the SIS, it was pre kind of MI5, MI6. So he's definitely a British agent. I think that's confirmed in Secret Agent 666 by Spence. You could check that book. It's an excellent book on Crowley and his kind of...
I've heard about it
before. Yeah, it's well worth your time. I think I've read through it twice. But he found proof that Crowley was a British asset with the knowledge of the U.S. And he was doing all these funny stunts here. Like he got out into, I think, the Hudson Bay with a violinist and took his so-called Irish passport, which nobody knows how he came by. He was presenting himself as kind of sympathetic to the Irish Republic, right? So that was 1916, I think, was the attempt to kind of kick the Brits out of Ireland, which failed. But he did the stunt where he ripped up his passport and threw it in the water. And that was also in the newspaper. So he was actually a very astute, for his time, astute marketer or somebody who knew how to use media and get a lot of media. So there's a lot of records of him in papers all over the place. But anyway, so that was one of the things. He also worked for two small pro-German newspapers. One was called The International. The other is The Fatherland. And he knows a lot of people in kind of like the spy world at that time in New York. And you have to remember in World War I, really one of the chief aims of England in World War II too as well, was to get the U.S. on their side or get them to war. And so Wilson was anti-war, if you remember.
Well, but that was what he told the people. So right. Much about Wilson is a paradox, but that's how politicians are.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. Well said. I mean, I think that's a whole nother show. But anyway, he was publicly anti-war. But what happened was this whole, the Lusitania that Crowley came to the U.S. on eventually, I think in 1917 or 18, which was sunk off the coast of Ireland. And that was what brought the U.S. into the war. Kind of was a defining part where the Germans just threw up their hands and said, okay, we're done. But...
Also, it was also a false flag, and that's been documented, that it was an actual warship. It was announced to be a warship. The German chancellors put out newspaper articles all across the country in every major newspaper, but it was the Detroit Free Press that ran it, which pretty much says, hey, look, don't go on Lusitania. It's a warship. We know it's a warship. Therefore, it's an open target. And they warned everybody, and just how it was supposed to rendezvous with warships. There was no warships, and it was right in the heart of where the U-boats were going. So
they let it right into the trap, right? Right into exactly. It sunk and sacrificed. I think a lot of people, I think hundreds of people died on that. It was a transport ship. Yeah, they were secretly transporting arms, is my understanding, as well as people, as well as human beings. But people who don't think governments will sacrifice their citizens for political purposes are very naive, because it happens all the time in history. Most notably, in my opinion, in Israel in 2022, 2023. That's another story. Anyway, so Crowley, he actually writes in his biography, he wrote a kind of a lengthy biography called Confessions, and he writes in there, my work in the U.S. was done and I went back. So he kind of tacitly acknowledges that that was the real reason he was in the U.S. And there were other things that happened that were strange there. He was also doing these kind of workings. Workings is kind of like a drawn out ceremonial magical thing. And one of the interesting things that happened, and he was right, I think, on Washington Place. Like, he was really living in Manhattan, like right in the center of Manhattan. But he had something called the Alamantra working. And the results of that are really remarkable, because at the end of that, he drew this being that he met that he called Lamb. And it looks like a gray alien. It's basically our modern picture of gray aliens that's, like, put out by, like, Communion or whatever like that. So that's kind of inexplicable. And it kind of validates that Crowley is having these kind of extrasensory events. I mean, he's astral traveling. He says that he's doing this stuff. He's trying to talk to people. He's meeting with people around the world outside of his body. So kind of there's evidence of that, of him believing that it's happening. So the Alamantra working in 1918, he comes back to the UK. The war is done. The Great War is over. And what does he do next? He decides that he's being called to start like a magical fraternity or magical group. And he ends up throwing the I Ching, I think. And he says the optimal spot is this place in the middle of nowhere, really. I mean, he picks it for magical reasons, which is in Sicily. It's called Cefalù. And so it's really a reformed barn. Like, it's not very nice, but he draws all the lurid drawings all along the walls and puts a magical floor on it. So for ceremonial magic, and invites people there from the kind of elite or cultural friends and things. He stays there, I think, for a couple of years, and then eventually gets kicked out by Mussolini. Like, Mussolini says, "You're gone," pulls the plug on him, kicks him out of Italy. So that'll be the first time that he's been kicked out of a country. It won't be the last. Well, so then,
dude, for Mussolini to kick your ass out of his own country.
Yeah, I think they might have gotten sharp to him that he was up to no good in keeping tabs on Mussolini, because he just happened to be at one time the kind of infamous march on Rome by Mussolini when the fascists really took over. Grolli was in Rome at the same time for the same three days. He must have been writing stuff or doing missives or doing some kind of intel work. And we'll see that in really the 20th century, that a lot of occultists seem to be very comfortable with intel work, very secretive types, and are good recruits. Grolli seems to have been a good one. And then, so then he's done there. He's kicked out of Italy. He's never in really great health. He has asthma. He rolls over to Tunisia, south of Italy, south of Cefalù or south of Sicily, stays in some boarding house. He declares himself a world teacher after Krishnamurti gets declared as world teacher by the Blavatsky types. There's like a writing sentence, "I'm the real world teacher. You can't make this like young, literal Indian Brahmin kid a world teacher. I'm the one." Then he makes his way to France. So he's into France. If you remember, it's kind of the city of lights. It becomes, for a Western elite, especially for the U.S. kind of elites, the place to go, you know, to travel and spend. It's Paris is a dump now, but it didn't used to be. It really was a beautiful place and a place of art and literature. It's been ruined a lot.
Even in the 80s, there was some shabby places, but even in the 80s, it's a world-class city.
Same thing happened to London. All the major cities have been like overthrown by migrants in the worst way. Like, the culture is terrible. It's just a dump. People are living in the streets. I don't know who thinks that this is some kind of optimal situation, but if you do, you're an idiot. I mean, these cities were really great cities. The cities always have problems, but the people, at least in the States, people running these urban cities are idiots. I mean, they're really stupid. Like, they're really stupid. Like they shouldn't be running a McDonald's.
But they're also bought and sold, and they're told what to do by other people who actually hold the strings, the hidden hand. I mean, and I love talking about the hidden hand, but that would be...
Well, we can. So, I mean, the Soros prosecutors are a perfect example. They're probably one of the reasons why the cities are going down, because he found a weak place to insert these terrible prosecutors in the U.S., and that just kind of devolved everything, put it into a doom loop, because you're not going to arrest people for petty crimes. Petty crimes are going to happen, and they're just going to, you know, one needle prick at a time, destroy a city. And that's really what happened. That's why you have to that's why Giuliani actually cleaned up New York, is because he was just prosecuting everybody for everything. It actually kind of cleaned up a little bit.
Well, anyway, clean up, but it was kind of a tyrannical thing, the broken window theory. I think it was it that came up with it.
Anyway, that's a whole different story.
Oh, yeah.
We'll Crowley.
Crowley.
So Crowley.
Come back to the Paris thing in a little bit.
Right. He's in Paris. He's staying with a friend, Harris. Mm-hmm. He's still practicing magic. Eventually in 28, he gets kicked out of Paris as well. So now he's been kicked out of two countries. And then he slithers off to the Weimar Republic. He's in Berlin, right? While Hitler's coming to power, he's there. Mm-hmm. And he has kind of a weird, kind of overlapping life with Hitler, as strange as it sounds, because some of the people he worked for at the Fatherland knew Hitler, interviewed Hitler in 1924, 23. And some of these guys that he knew, Evers, I think in German, E-W-E-R-S, became a member of the Nazi party. He's friends with Crowley and writing kind of occult books and things like that in Germany. So Crowley's there in Germany, Weimar. Hitler comes to power, 32. Something happens. I think he leaves and kind of like the last 15 years of his life. I think that he kind of just stayed not in great health, stayed in this. He ended up in a kind of higher end boarding house in Hastings, at the very south of the UK. And then he dies in 47. So that's basically it. He was a total junkie too. He was totally addicted to opium. Like, I don't think he could function without it. But he also was a believer in just using tons of drugs. But he also said about Hitler, he says, before Hitler was, I am. So he kind of has some weird overlook. Like, I think in that, because Hitler and Krillin, and I write about this in Children of the Beast, my follow-on to Prophet of Evil, they both believe in the primacy of the human will, right? So it's not God's will, like what it says in the Lord's Prayer, thy will be done. It's my will and triumph of the will, and Crowley's the limo, the will.
Well, wasn't Hitler a follower of Blavatsky?
And then yes, that's yeah.
There's the Viril Society and the Thule Society. So it would make complete sense, at least to me, that they would share common ideas like that, where it's the will of man, not the will of God, that rules the world.
Yes, yeah, I think so. And it's interesting too. This guy Ewers, who I was talking about, who maybe kind of was a low kind of cultural functionary in the Nazi Party, he was part of the same kind of pan-Germanic theorists that Hitler loved. So there was like two guys. It was like Hans Guido von List. Like, I can't even remember. I can't believe I even remember their names, but very kind of obscure people from the US point of view who people wouldn't find interesting. But Hitler had this, he was like an underground reader of these magazines. And these guys put out this book called Ostara that Hitler wanted every copy of it. And this was the kind of stuff. It was kind of the Blavatsky Aryan kind of overlord stuff. And Ewers knew these guys. So Hitler, Ewers, and Ewers to Crowley, the overlaps are really there. It's really not a joke. And actually, one of Crowley's kind of followers and a longtime friend, he was always in correspondence with, it was a guy by the name of J.F.C. Fuller, who was a military theoretician, but on the side, he was an occultist. He was writing books about yoga and all kinds of strange stuff, but liked Crowley, wrote a book with him called A Star in the West, and was one of two British people invited to Hitler's 50th birthday party. I believe it was 1937. And so he was known to Hitler specifically. And the reason why he was known to Hitler is because his ideas on tank warfare after World War I were adopted by the Germans. And Fuller is friends with a guy by the name of Hans Guderian, Guderian. And he was one of the people, I think, running one of the prongs on the invasion of Russia, like a huge guy. And for some reason, he didn't get prosecuted in Nuremberg. So he just retired. He was just seen as a non-political military guy who followed orders, you know, just as a military guy, whereas like Keitel, who was kind of Hitler's lackey, ended up getting shot in, like, I think 47 for making decisions outside of military code. And I think Guderian was like, you know, this is the military code. This is the military code of justice. You don't shoot people. And Keitel, in his position, that's why he was in that position, because he was a lickspittle for Hitler. But the overlapping connections between Crowley and Hitler are there in time and place. There's probably even more. It's just not something. So they're probably OTO members very much involved in the Nazi Party. It's just like there's probably that research just hasn't been translated. But the OTO is every one of Hitler's favorite artists. I can't remember his name offhand, but somebody he commissioned to do work was an OTO member, of which Crowley became the head of the OTO in 1925. So Hitler did this thing when Hess flew over to the U.S. He did something called the Action Hess, which I think was in 40, where he banned all these secret societies. But which kind of lets you know that he thought that they were extant and subversive, but to his party. But yeah, right. So the Crowley Hitler stuff is real. Yeah.
How did if Hitler banned secret societies, did he disavow his belief with the Thule Society and all that? And real?
I don't think so. I think that he really was. I think if you look at like the externalization of the hierarchy. Mm-hmm. By Bailey, which was written in the 30s. It's a carbon copy of Nazi ideology. It's all there. You know, it's really Luciferianism. I think Nazism and Luciferianism are one and the same. It's like the Uberman. We got to get to this new world. You know, we're the Aryans. We're at the top of the race, and there's all these subhumans everywhere. And, you know, they're impeding us. This is like Barbara Marx Hubbard. It's all that ideology where you have this subhumans and stuff like that. So I think that it all got integrated in there through Hitler, but he wasn't the only one. I think he became the Avatar, but there was another guy named Rosenberg or something like that. He was like the Nazi ideologue. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really read his stuff, but my understanding, it's all Blavatsky. Like, he put something together and that's all. And the rumor is that I've never verified this. People have told me this, but Hitler on his side table didn't have a Bible. He had Blavatsky's ISIS Unveiled or one of the other ones. I forgot what it was.
I've heard that too. So did Elvis, by the way.
Yeah, Elvis was people don't know this, but Elvis was like a known occult, like esotericist. He liked esotericism.
Yeah. It goes deep. I mean, the influence, the impact of the occult, specifically Crowley, goes so deep within society, and it's so sublime. It's almost as if it's, in a comparative sense, the mycelium of society, mushrooms, and the underground root part is called mycelium, and it is the largest organism. The largest organism in the world is a big mushroom patch, I think, up in the Northwest. It's huge, amazing, and it's kind of like that's how Crowley's influences are, and it just pops up here, it pops up there, it pops up here, and it pops up there. And you pick all the mushrooms and thinking we got it all. It's like, nope, it's just going to keep popping up and popping up and popping up. You know, that's why he's always, fascinating. I have a friend who was, when L. Ron was making movies, she was his production assistant and worked directly with L. Ron. And when I found out about that, it kind of really tweaked my mind because she's a very strong person. And she doesn't talk about it that much. In fact, I'm trying to get her on the show, but she's like, I don't know, man. I don't know. One thing, a point in history I've always found interesting is the time when L. Ron Hubbard, and by the for the listeners out there, L. Ron Hubbard is the founder of Scientology. And his best friend, Jack Parsons, who was the founder of JPL and one of the founders of NASA. That particular time that they were together is a very much pinnacle point for the Crowleyan philosophies, if you will, because one went into NASA and built NASA. In fact, my friend who was the OTO member looked at me one day and says, you know, NASA's full of us OTO guys, don't you? And then once I learned about Parsons, I was like, oh, that makes sense. And then you had the other one, which is L. Ron, that started Scientology. Both were great men, not good men, but they did great things in the basic definition of it. And both of them were disciples of Aleister Crowley. In fact, wasn't it Parsons that started the first lodge in America, the Agape Lodge in Orange County, or was it the first OTO Lodge on the West Coast?
I'm not sure. It was the Agape Lodge in Pasadena, and it was considered by Crowley, I think, to be the most important OTO outpost, and Parsons the most important member of the OTO. But he knew other things. I don't know if he started it because there was somebody at the head of it. There's kind of an infamous picture of Parsons conducting a Crowley ritual in an attic off of Hollywood Boulevard. So somebody else was running it, but he became kind of, I think Crowley actually kicked out the older head of the OTO and replaced him with Parsons, if I remember correctly. Yeah. But yeah, he was there. There's somebody did a whole video, I think a show about Parsons and the OTO. I haven't watched it yet, but it was about that whole time frame and a lot of overlapping with science fiction writers like L. Ron Hubbard.
Yeah. I think it was L. Ron's son that says Scientology is a magical working extended over time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, of course, you have, and knowing what L. Ron did, of course, it makes sense that he was a black magician. The way that he was able to manipulate and to control people at almost an intrinsic level, you know, and he was one of the most ugliest guys.
Yeah, it's a horror show. Yeah, Scientology is terrible for human beings. I mean, it's really a bunch of mind control techniques, too. But they, he has a kind of a famous, not a famous, but there's a recording of him talking about Crowley. And I have that in my book, Children of the Beast. But he goes, Aleister Crowley, the most famous magician who got the knowledge of the 14th, 15th, and 16th centuries. What a man, the great beast. So you can hear Hubbard talk about that. He has to know a lot more. Yeah. And his son said, that he would see his dad with magical books and Crowley's books before going out to lectures and stuff like that. Like Hubbard would be reading them and was just really intrigued by them. He's a lot like Crowley, like into magic and drugs, like tons of drugs. Hubbard was on uppers and all kinds of stuff all the time and really strange rituals. Like he wants like really graphic. Like I have it in my Children of the Beast book. It's not believable, but it's like soul cracking. They call it soul cracking,
which is what?
Basically climb on another woman and stare her in the eyes. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to go in details, but it's like, it's almost like a form of like anti sex magic or something. Like you can read about it in Children of the Beast, but this woman said he came into her room, lied down on top of her and stared her in the eyes for an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Naked.
Wow. And just laid there. Yeah. No intercourse, no nothing. That's just pure dominance. I mean, that's basically like a psychic rape, if you will.
He's how about this? He stuck his flaccid penis inside of her and stared her in the eyes for an hour.
That's a hell of a feat. Sorry.
That's what she said. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that's just one of his influences. You know, if you look at Sergeant, the pop culture, let's look at that. You know, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. What's up there in the upper corner? But a picture of Crowley. You had Jimmy.
Crowley might be the Sergeant Pepper. That's the whole thing.
I heard that.
It was 20 years ago today. Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play. That's when Crowley died, right? Didn't it come out in 67 or 68?
I've heard that discussed. And I think the reference is Billy Shears is the one that's being referred to as Crowley in that, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. 56, right? Yeah, it's all there. At least Billy Shears and Harry Potter and Tyler Durden. Those are not mistakes. They said a lot of magical stuff. And McCartney even said, or Paul McCartney, whatever that guy is.
Cool.
You know, the Beatles is about magic. You know, it's magic. And I have that in the direct quotes.
And didn't he say magic with a K?
Yeah.
Yeah, that right there is, the people that don't understand the significance of that, that's a very defined way of saying it is about ritualistic magic, because the difference between magic with a C and magic with a K is magic with, and this is my understanding. If I'm wrong, please correct me, because I love learning from you. Magic with a C is stage magic, performative magic. Magic with a K is ritualistic magic. And one is illusion, and one is, at least in their beliefs, is communicating and, I guess, being one with, if you want to throw in possession, with entities outside of our dimension, our realm, demons, if you want to call them that. They've been referred to that as well. And it's kind of weird when you break it down. It really, really is. But these people believe this stuff, and the followers of them believe this stuff. What was it? Was it Hugh Hefner that said it's either Hugh Hefner, I think they're both followers of Crowley, or who was Timothy?
Alfred Kinsey. Hefner was supposedly like Kinsey's disciple, right? So Kinsey was a total freak and went to Crowley's magical place in Cefalù. He wanted Crowley's diaries, and he was hanging out with a really like a stone cold warlock by the name of Kenneth Anger.
Oh yeah, that pretty much killed Jimmy Page's career, from what I understand.
Well, they had a battle. They had some kind of magical battle and fallout. But there's pictures of Kinsey and Anger in Cefalù. And there's also pictures, I guess, like Kinsey was doing tests with Anger involved in them and filmed it. He was kind of like a low-level pornographer. But a lot of his science is just total trash. It's junk. It's like Fauci science. It's just total baloney.
Was it Table 34? Or something.
Yes,
like,
yeah,
right. Masturbation.
Janet Riesman did the work on. She was on Ed Opperman, actually. Unfortunately, she passed away, but she spent her life kind of exposing Kinsey's stuff that was never really. He would not give his data to third parties to verify, which is like basically the scientific method. Like, so a lot of his numbers and stuff, and right, Table 34 gets hypergraphic. Yeah.
Yeah, and he employed he had two of them that I remember. He had one of them that was just a sick psychopathic pedophile. Then he had another one that made him look like a Boy Scout who was the head of a Nazi death camp, and he used him to do experiments on Jewish children, prisoners in concentration camps. And he had no problem with it. To him, it was like, hey, it's research. And I don't think that he even though I understand he himself was not a pedophile, but I could be wrong on that, but he didn't have any problems with pedophilia.
Is that who? Kinsey?
Yeah, Kinsey.
I forgot the whole story, but I know that he was like bisexual, and he encouraged all the people who worked around him to be pansexual, I guess the way you could put it, and, you know, break down repressions. And he was financed by the Rockefellers. That's given with some enormous sums of money. At the time, it was like $500,000 a year. And how he died is in my book. Like, this is not somebody. I mean, the really scary thing is that my understanding, like in my group, everybody knows Kinsey's illegitimate and a freak.
Right.
But it seems like in certain other colleges, they look at this guy like he's legit. Like Sex and the Human. Yeah, they think that he's legit. He's not. And that shows like how much junk science is out there.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, his conclusions were basically the same conclusions as Crowley or the Satanists in general. It's like no total freedom. There's no barriers, you know?
Well, that goes back to, you know, the original thing. What is the influence of Aleister Crowley? You can trace today's, let's just take one example, the trans agenda, which is being pushed upon society and especially children. Okay. That can be tied directly back to Kinsey, which can be directly tied back to Crowley. Kinsey can be tied to Hugh Hefner, right? He was a follower of Kinsey. And you brought up an interesting point that I want to touch on really quick. You said about how universities praise this man. True. In the 80s in college, I took human sexuality. And they had a whole thing on Kinsey, and they praised him as this almost genius who discovered this whole thing about sexuality and how it's a good thing and all this. And that's how he was portrayed. Then I, years later, started learning about who he was. And just like you, I'm like, no, he was a sick, twisted son of a bitch. And now that I found out that you just found, I didn't know that he was tied directly to Crowley. So then again, Crowley's influence on the modern day, boom, that's one, just one spoke in so much of a greater wheel. When you look at it, from more of a higher level,
Crowley and Parsons are attached to Harry Hay. Harry Hay is the founder of the gay rights movement, the first kind of gay rights guy who was in Hollywood, literally playing piano for OTO rituals. Like, that's a proven fact. And he actually had references to Crowley his whole life. But yeah, he was an occultist too. He had this Mattachine Society, which was a gay underground society, and their cover is like a lightning bolt. It's like the total Satan, you know, I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning, or Christ says so. It's crazy how much he's influenced the culture in a very deviant way. Yeah. I mean, Crowley's clearly a deviant.
I mean, if you look at modern politics, when the emails from John Podesta came out, which ironically, you know what his password was, William?
1234.
No, his password. I think he
password. Okay, it's even worse, right?
So the Russians hacked, and gosh darn it! And I want to get into how Hillary is a political devious genius and knows how to float stuff up that the other party takes full control. Birthers. That the list can go on, but that's another show for a different.
Yeah, well, the deceptions don't really stop, like the psyops. Nobody on the left even tells the truth. They don't even try to tell the truth anymore.
No, they're like the mafia going, what? It's kind of like you probably know who he is, Larry Nichols. He was a Clinton insider whistleblower back in the 90s. And I remember when I was listening to an interview with him with Alex Jones, and he was in that gruff voice going, you know what, Alex? You know what the good news is about the Clintons? They're lying to you. That means they don't have their plans together yet. He says, the minute that they start telling you the truth, is the time you need to start getting worried. And we're at the point now where they're just like, what? 81 million votes. Man,
right. It's in your face. Or insurrection. When they just had January 6th 2 days ago, they keep saying it's like the most incredible event in human history, in American history, that it happened. And I'm like, where's the violence? Who had guns? You guys let them in. It was a Fed insurrection. You guys are I mean, there was a guy on Tucker the other day. Mm-hmm. Is it Chip Hawkins? I forgot his name. He says there's 200 feds in there. That's just a joke. They were all let in there. The fact that some of these people weren't there probably should be cause for alarm. Like Alex Jones, why aren't you in that mix? I thought he was there with a bullhorn. Very strange. Very strange.
Well, now Alex is back on X. Thank God to Elon, who's going to save the world and free speech, everybody. Yeah.
And Tucker.
Hey, I heard something. This is just a side note, right? I heard this about something that Alex said, and I wanted to see if you can clarify this. Is Alex now pushing the brain chip from Elon or something?
I hope not. I don't know. I haven't seen that. I'm not aware of that. I don't know.
Okay, I was just wondering if you knew anything about it.
I wouldn't take anything. I wouldn't trust Elon Musk either. I don't trust Tucker, Elon, or Jones.
No, I don't either. I mean, I like Tuck. I mean, I have to admit, I really like his rhetoric and stuff like that. And then I'm like, it's just like so many of these people that I've liked, once I start finding out the backstory, I'm like, oh, not Tuck.
Yeah, not this, yeah.
You know, it's like Tulsi Gabbard. I voted for her for the last election, right? And then I found out, she's part of the Global Young Leaders Initiative with the WEF. And she's now part of psychological operations for the military and is head of her base. And I'm like,
I think that's where she started. That's what she was. Even before she became a politician, she was a psychological warfare operator. So
they're good. These people are so good. And the average person has no conception of the information propaganda they're being exposed to. And
no way.
And the minute I've tried to say anything, because I used to be, many years ago, I'm going to save the world. I'm going to tell everybody about this, world conspiracy type stuff, right? And I learned a long time ago, that's just a waste of time. If somebody wants to know, I'm more than willing to sit down and talk their ear off about them. Right. But if they don't want to know, fuck it, let's talk about the weather. You know, because the only thing
I think Tucker Carlson really was... he's moved off of the corporate media and gone to where everybody is now. Nobody I know who's intelligent watches TV news. I don't know anybody. They're not in my social circle. I think it's like gone. Like anybody who wants to get real information or the truth is on alternate media or Twitter or something, doing shows like this, podcasting.
Yeah, exactly. But even that, in this day and age, try to find out real research and information is so difficult. It's not like 10, 15 years ago. We can just do a basic Google search. And whatever you search, the relevance would come up. And you have all these links. And you can look at these blog posts. You can look at these documentaries. You can look at these blah, blah, blah. It just goes on. Now, this is an experiment that I did. I heard about this. The most that you'll get out of any Google search is about 350 results, because you can only go back about 32 or 35 pages, and each page has 10 results. So I did that one day, and sure, it's like, boom, what I hit the end of the internet. You're telling me I have 2.1 million results, but page 35, I can't go any farther. And then you go back and look at the pages that are there. Right, even the ones that are ditched farther back, so many of them are corporate-sponsored pages, foundation, this following that. So it's like going to a normie and saying, do your own research, which I used to. I'm hesitant because I know exactly what they'll do. They'll do a Google search. They'll go to Wikipedia, Snopes, PolitiFact, and that's it. And then they'll say.
Or Truth News Guard. I love News Guard, too. That's good. That's rich.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, NewsGuard.
What a joke.
The ultimate memory holers, my God. But that's big across the internet. And the control and consolidation of the internet is really clamping down. I remember a long time ago, before when social media was just starting to become popular, and most people had websites, they said what they're doing is they're creating these social media platforms as electronic ghettos. And then over time, people will move into these electronic ghettos, and that's where they'll remain. Some of them might even not even know you can go out to a website. But then again, if they screw the DNS, unless you have that exact URL, good luck finding it on Google.
Right. Just so like it's really true. I think that like Facebook is an intellectual, the informational ghetto. If they're censoring stuff, like that's why I just destroyed everything to do with Mark Zuckerberg. Like I know he's evil, but I'm surprised people are still on there. Like how are you going to get good information when they're censoring it or taking you off? I never thought I'd lose my YouTube channel. Like they took my YouTube channels down 2020 and now they're back. One I can't even get into, but like it's some kind of like a techno punishment. It's a joke. It's totally a violation of my free speech. I never swore or did anything. I mean, it's such a joke. The election was stolen and the shots are dangerous.
Yeah. Go out and get your 8th booster after you've had COVID.
That's so crazy. They're still pushing it. That's why you know it's an agenda. Like they haven't stopped.
Like, I have a totally lot of evil. Just as a side note, right? I have my prayer circle, William, is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not just, hey, Bill fell down and broke his leg. Okay. I have two friends. I have one friend who their teenage son lost both kidneys. I have another friend who lost a kidney. Wow. I have another friend who he's having these peculiar kidney results. I have another friend whose daughter was early 30s, had this massive, luckily it wasn't cancerous, tumors on her ovaries. It went just across her whole abdomen. And the list goes on and on and on. So every time, you know, I hear about this, I asked him, do you or the doctors know what caused this? You know, and it's more out of curiosity, not to be like pointing a finger. William, every one of them, and I mean every single one of them, gets that fluoride stare and goes, they don't know what's causing this. They don't know.
And they it's like a Night of the Living Dead or something like that. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Like these people have been snatched.
It's like that mixed with Idiocracy.
Have to know. They've got to see the correlation. It's so crazy. None of these things happened when I was a kid. I had one kid who had cancer. That was it. Now, like, everybody's coming down with something sick. It's terrible. Just, like, I did 49 things on Bioweapon Blues. I had to stop. It was too depressing.
I listened to a lot of those, and you were right on point. Because when you would say, this, you're like, oh, you don't believe me? Well, let's pull up this study, or let's reference back to what this person said, and so on and so on. We're living in a crazy world. I mean, not to be religious, but I think we're living in the end times. I really do, because people have been saying that for a long time. But up until modern times, the technology did not exist to have something like the mark of the beast that will be either in your right hand or your forehead. Now it does, and that's old school. The beast system, no man shall buy nor sell, lest he have the number of the beast. CBDCs are being rolled out. World government. I mean, I remember in the 80s when I started learning about world government, I would get laughed at, literally. I'd be like, hey, man, you better watch out for this world government stuff that they're forming, you know? And I'd be laughed at going, no, that'll never happen, boy, you tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists. This is America, son. What are you talking about with government?
It's right in front of your face. The World Health Organization is a push for global government and fascism and everything you think that is bad.
And they're
right in front of your face. So sorry. Yeah.
Oh no, they're blatant about it anymore.
Yeah.
Just look at their video. Hawaris. Yeah, we're gonna pretty much, you know, biological evolution's done. So it's gonna be artificial evolution, and we're gonna have a brain chip, and you don't have to participate, but you're going to get left behind because we're going to create a new species of human. Yeah, what could go wrong with that?
Right?
You know,
that's everything. Every time they try to do that, everything wrong goes wrong. Well, anybody says a new species, it's actually kind of a satanic imperative. If you see a lot of the satanic writing, they always talk about the global Homo galacticus or all this stuff. It's all in there, like we're a different species and we're going to act different and all that. It's there.
Well, according to David Icke, they are. Don't know if that's true or not, but I just want to throw that in there. Hey, really quick, I got a question for you.
Okay.
And we're running, we got about 11 minutes left or so.
Okay.
What of the Pauline Pierce and Aleister Crowley connection? Is there any legitimacy to that?
I think I couldn't get rid of it. You know, I couldn't get rid of that connection for a variety of reasons. She looks just like him. Yeah, the family looks, acts like Thelemites. There's tons of 11s all over 9/11 and George Bush. Mm-hmm. 77s as well. So these are kind of crowley numbers. And the timing is right, right? So her mother was Pauline Pierce, wealthy.
Just a second, so I could just kind of enlighten. Many people probably don't know who Pauline Pierce was. Pauline Pierce was the mother of Barbara Bush. So that's the connection.
Right.
And could you go over just how that connection happened? Why so many people just can't get it out of their head?
Well, I think they can't get out of her head because she looks like him. Like that George Bush Jr. could be like the offspring of Crowley. She has a big blocky head like Crowley has. True. And her mom was in Paris. So I was telling you, like, after Crowley got kicked out of Italy, mm-hmm. he's in Paris with this guy, Harris, whose girlfriend or whatever at the time is this woman who supposedly knew Pauline Pierce. That's the rumor. And Pauline Pierce was involved, supposedly, in these kind of dark rituals that Crowley was, we know that he was involved in at that time. He's involved in something called erotocomatose lucidity, and she might have gotten knocked up.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it was my understanding that she was actually staying with him at the same house or apartment in Paris while that was going on. And then she comes back 8 months later, Barbara's born.
Yeah.
Now, I can see one of two.
Tommy's right. You can just look it up on Wikipedia. Look it up and see when, Barbara Pierce was born. It's the timing is right. And I just posted something on my Twitter feed about the family pictures, and she just, one of these things does not look like the others. It's Barbara Pierce. Good. And the Pierce family has huge assets. Like, I think they're associated with New York Bank or something like that. So, yeah. So, I mean, it would make sense. And the kind of arrangement between her and George Bush Sr. seems like an arranged type marriage. I think they met when she was very young, like 15 or 16. Right. Bush was young too. So it has that kind of whiff of kind of like a eugenics type marriage or something like that. Like that was what was going on. Like they were set, not somebody who kind of just met each other in happenstance or something like that.
Yeah, love at first sight, meet in a cafe, look each other's eyes, and then find out they're the ones meant for each other and go right. off into the sunset. But it goes
back. Wealthy arranged marriages go back as far as time, right? So powerful people marry for powerful reasons and other reasons. So maybe that was the whole idea. Keep the money in the family lines. And
yeah. So once again, it comes back to what the original premise of this show is the influence of Crowley into the modern day. If that rumor is true, right? Got to put an if on it.
There's weird pictures of them together where she's the focus. Like, it's not George Bush Sr. Like, they're interested in her. And she said all kinds of Crowleyan type of stuff. Like, when there was that huge hurricane in New Orleans, oh, this is good for these people. Oh, you know, she had no sympathy for them. And the Bush family, the heads are, I mean, George Bush is an occultist. I mean, we know that. He's part of the Skull and Bones, like the darkest stuff at Yale. So, and so was his son, and so was his daddy. So there's easy to think that there would be an overlap. They're not a Christian family. They don't have any, they've all of their kind of Christian stuff is on the surface. It's just not even like real.
Well, the Christian is just a role that they play for the political theater for the masses. Yeah. Like Hillary said, I have a private opinion. I have a public opinion. And like I always said, well, what a mafia don. Right. What's he going to do? Go out and tell you, yeah, I'm the head of the New York mob. Right. No, that's not how they roll because they don't want that to be known. They're businessmen. What businessmen? What? Yeah. We've amassed this wealth because of hard work. You know, it's just like that with occultists. It's just like that with drug dealers. It's just like that with evil people. You know, the greatest feat that the devil ever performed is convincing humanity he does not exist. So it makes complete sense. They don't want you to know that. And if you do talk to somebody about it, they have the PR background to instantly tag you in general, not you as in William Ramsey, but the public in general as crazy conspiracy theorists. If you push too far, well, then, you know, you might get, you know, commit suicide with two taps to the head. it happens, you know. So, crazy, crazy world we're living in, my friend.
Yeah. Man, I think that the kind of corporate media has distorted that. Like they've just really, I don't even think it's propaganda. I think they've really shaped people's personalities in the worst way possible. Like it's really toxic.
Well, it's mind control. And I use that term now when people don't bat an eye anymore. I'm like, yeah, mind control.
Yeah.
Even normies get it. Like, oh yeah, yeah, I see that. You know, I did a paper in college a long time ago, and the thesis was this. It was for an advertising class. If you can control the media of any given population, you control the public opinion of that given population. And that, my friend, we both know is an extremely powerful force. And we're seeing it play out today. Example, COVID, the shot, the whole thing. You have 30% of the people that kind of saw through the weeds and said, yeah, I don't feel like doing that. You had the other 70% of the population buy it lock, stock, and hook, I guess.
Right.
And then turn against the other 30% and treat them as pariahs and then blame them for killing the vaccine.
Grandma. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're going to kill grandma, yeah.
You're going to kill grandma, darn it. You better take that jab. Yeah, it's only been tested for 6 weeks from inception to injection. It was 10 months, but completely new genetically modified technology. Before killed all the animals, test subjects before, but we don't want you to know that. We want to bring up Anthony Fauci and all these people you so well respect them, light lab coats and celebrities. Dolly Parton, vaccine.
Right.
And people just fall for it. And trying to wake them up, you get the fluoride stare, you get that violent trigger reaction from them. And there's really very little in between, I can see. I mean, there's a few friends that if I present something well, they'll at least consider it. But the majority of people I know won't even entertain the conception that maybe they are being lied to.
Right. No, it's very strange. I mean, I see it in my family too. Like, like you said, it's mind control. And that's really the saddest thing about it is like they've been bombarded, but this is what's going on. I think it was a really clever rollout. You know, that's I marvel at it.
You have to respect deviance.
People don't think evil exists. They're totally wrong. People will just do evil stuff for evil reasons. Yeah.
Well, people that aren't psychopaths or sociopaths don't understand that these people do not think like they do. So yeah, they compare their actions through a moral lens to people who don't have morals. They have no empathy, like a sociopath. Hey, if a million people got to die for me to make $1 million, so be it. They can tighten their tie, look themselves in the mirror, have a good meal, and get a good night's sleep. Psychopaths get off on that. They're like, I get to kill and torture 10 million people. Oh, yeah, baby doll. And they, too, can tighten their tie, have a big meal, look themselves in the mirror, and have a good night's sleep. And if you don't understand that difference in thinking, then you're going to be deceived every time because people know how to manipulate the moralness, the naivety of the average person. And I've met people like that before. And at first, yeah, I got suckered in. And then when you find out who they are, you're like, okay, now I know what to look for next time. Those ultimate charismatic people that just tell you everything you want to hear, always make you feel good. Those are the ones that I've found are pathological liars and sociopaths, narcissists. Because guess what? Nobody looks good every freaking day. All right. But when somebody says, you look beautiful, and tells you everything they want to hear, one, they know how to read people, so they know what that person wants to hear. And all, it's a simple trick. You find out what that person wants to hear, and then you just give it to them. That's it. Boom.
I think you're right. I think that's the Scientology model, right?
Yeah.
You just try to figure out what they need to give them a personality test. Yeah. Now you know everything about them or what you know more about them, mm-hmm. and then you just tailor the approach. Psychopaths do that. Sociopaths,
yeah.
They're learning. I mean, the thing is that the way they think too is like they have learned it over time. A lot of times, you know, the older ones have run so many different types of things that they get better and better at it. Yeah.
Yeah. They just recycled the playbook and they just changed names to protect the guilty anymore. I think that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But if that, William, I think that the show is about over. I thank you for your time, your work, your research, your books, your podcast. The amount of things I've learned from you and been enlightened has been incredible. I don't have the time nor the words to articulate that. But I want to thank you for coming on the show. Everybody out there, before we go, I was almost amiss. Can you please tell the listeners where you can be found?
Yeah, you can listen to my podcast. I'm over 1,100 episodes now on William Ramsey Investigates. I also have a website, same thing, WilliamRamseyInvestigates.com. And then also I have a Patreon where you can watch all five of my documentaries. It's just $5 a month. And I have putting up a lot of my shows without ads there. So you can listen without getting bombarded with ads from Spotify, if you so choose. And that's basically the best place to find me on Twitter as well, too. I post a lot on Twitter.
Yeah. Well, fantastic, William. Thank you. I'd love to have you on in the future and continue this conversation, maybe go down a few more rabbit holes.
Yeah, yeah. Anytime. We can do Children of the Beast. I'll send you a copy of the book. You can read through it. Oh, you'll be surprised how many people other than Harry Hay and Kinsey cruelly influenced.
Yeah, please do. I'd really like to read that book. You know, see how the rabbit hole goes. And, you know.
I think I sent you guys one of my books. Didn't I send you guys my most recent book, The Smiley Face Killers? I don't remember. I sent you and Chuck one.
I don't know. That was a long time ago. Yeah. Okay. But at that, William, thank you for coming on the show. Everybody out there, thank you for listening to my second show. Thank you for the overwhelming response that I've gotten on my first show. I'm truly humbled. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. And have a fantastic day.